Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It's Thursday, which means it is Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Our author, John Wilson, Varsity Blues: Scandal Within the Scandal. Love this whole concept because it is dealing with something that made headlines, but John's story did not. And of course, that is not going to come as a huge shock for a lot of you who understand the way that the media works and how it is that politicized stories end up operating. I want to thank you for being with us. And a lot of people are going to remember the Felicity Huffman, the Lori Loughlin a few years ago getting in trouble because of, they were essentially buying slots for their children into school. And this was, of course, seen and painted as the privilege. And the hammer really came down on some of these individuals, people that were used to seeing on television as actors and actresses being held accountable. And it really made headlines. But there were a lot of people that got caught up in this that were a totally separate story. And that's where John Wilson's story comes into play. And if you would, just so people know a little bit about your background, you weren't exactly raised privileged, were you?
No, not by any means. I grew up really in a very different world. I grew up in poverty. We grew up in the projects of Hartford, Connecticut, the Bowles Park housing projects. I had a single mother and three half siblings. I picked tobacco from the ages of 12 to 16 full time to help my family scrape by. So I didn't have any privilege. My mother had an eighth grade education, and that was it. And so hard work and education transformed my life. It enabled me to escape poverty in the projects and to build a successful career. I'm very thankful for that. And we were able to live the version of the American dream that we wanted up until March of 2019, when I was falsely arrested and accused as part of the Varsity Blues scandal. And it was just outrageous.
Well, I'll let the listeners know as we get into your story, reading a lot of the reviews of average people and just how taken aback they were by your story, how it was a chilling reminder of how good people can, for purposes that have nothing to do with law and order, can get swept up into something. And you could really get this sense that for a lot of people, this was a wake-up call and very frightening, particularly for parents. So that being said, if you would, tell us the story.
Well, it's pretty outrageous. Let me start with, you know, what some of these other parents did was outrageous. I would be outraged as a parent if my highly qualified child got bumped by a less qualified, you know, family who cheated on tests, who bribed coaches and so forth. And that's what was happening here. There were about 30 parents who abused their privilege and who broke the law and broke, you know, common standards of decency. We didn't do any of those things. My children were highly qualified on their own merits. For example, my twin daughters got a perfect score in the ACT and a near perfect score. Fewer than 5,000 people out of 1.8 million get a perfect score, right? So they were very qualified. My son had a 93 percentile, and he competed nationally and internationally for a decade, swimming and playing water polo. His high school coach was a nationally recognized coach, recommended him to the USC team. He had a world record swimming, and he joined the USC team. He was one of the fastest on the team. His swim times prove that. And so we were very different. And my donations went to IRS-certified charities and to USC. And USC gave us a receipt for our donations. So this was not a bribe. This was not false credentials for kids who are unqualified. And we didn't do anything fake. We never gave any fake information. The only fact that the government had was that Singer changed my son's profile, and he changed my son's swim time by 8%. That was it. And in the end, I deducted the donation to USC on my tax return on the wrong line. And that apparently is also a crime. So that was my big crime, is that Singer, the guy we trusted, who was recommended to us by Goldman Sachs, changed my son's swim time on a one-page profile by 8% and some other things. So that was it. And my son was qualified. He joined the team. What it turns out, as we went through this process, we found out why I was indicted. Singer had 3,000 accounts. The Singer was the guy at the center of this, who was the confessed con man, who was putting together. He had the largest consulting firm on the West Coast for many parents. He had 3,000 parent accounts. 99% of them were never charged. Only 1% of what he called dark side accounts. I wasn't one of them. But he also only had one parent who was based in Massachusetts. That was me. All of his accounts were based in California and a few sprinkled in some other states like Florida and New York. The Boston-based prosecutors uncovered this case from a recommendation or referral from somebody unrelated from a Connecticut case on a separate charge, a separate crime. That led them to uncover that Singer had all these California-based people, Felicity Huffman, Lori Loughlin, lots of other famous people. Steve Jobs was a client, many other famous people. And so with that information, they thought that this would be a high-profile case that could be good for their careers. And so they immediately needed to think about how they could manufacture a venue in Boston to keep this trial in Boston so the media spotlights would come here for their careers and not go to their counterparts in California. To help manufacture a venue, I was the only person who lived in Massachusetts. So despite the overwhelming evidence that they had that I was innocent, they charged me and treated my family like collateral damage in this process. So even though we were innocent and they falsely charged us, they were able to do that and get away with it through the trial process. And then once we lost at trial, because another outrageous part of this story, we got it all overturned at the appeals court level, all the core charges. But at this point, we're struggling with where do we go to get our reputations back? It's been 7 years of emotional, financial, and physical hell for my children, my wife, and myself.
We are talking with John Wilson, author of Varsity Blues, Scandal Within the Scandal. The beginning of all of this, the targeting of you, was there at first a sense that, well, clearly they're mistaken. Once they dig into this, they will realize that we didn't do anything wrong. And then if that was a point, when did things change? What was your mindset and how did it evolve as you began recognizing that this isn't something that they are, that's just going to go away?
Right. It was outrageous from day one. I've never been arrested or charged with a crime in my life before. I got off an airplane in Houston, Texas to go to a client meeting, and two FBI agents arrested me at the airport. As they handcuffed me and pushed me against the wall, they tell me I'm under arrest for honest services fraud. I was shocked. But I was even more shocked by their answer when I asked them, what does that mean? What is that charge? And they said, we don't know. We've never heard of it before. I said, how can you be arrested for something you don't even know what it is? They said, it's an unusual charge. We've never heard of it. And they proceeded to book me. They then threw me literally into a federal prison in Houston, 850 inmates in this prison. I was stripped down there by the prison guards, hosed down like an animal by two guards with hoses, given a jumpsuit, and before they put me in my cell block, which had about 60 people in it, they warned me and said, watch your back in here. You're the only older white guy here, and they're going to assume you're a pedophile. And they hate pedophiles in here, and someone may try to stab you with a shiv. And so I spent literally the next 2 days terrified that I would be stabbed by someone in this federal prison when I had no idea what I was even being charged with. And that was just day one of this 7-year nightmare scenario. And it got worse and worse from there.
Did it get to the point where you went from, okay, they're just mistaken, to these are actually bad people that don't care whether I did anything wrong. They're just after me in order to make their career.
Yeah, it got to that point very quickly. Not only the rough handling of the initial arrest, but even in the courthouse, and this was reported in Law 360, in the courthouse when we pled not guilty with all the other celebrities in Boston, my wife and I stayed back because we didn't have a flight to catch. We're the only Boston people. So the media throngs were crazy with the Hollywood celebrities. We decided to wait back. I told our lawyer to go home. We don't want to pay for our lawyer to sit there while we're, you know, just waiting for the media circus to die down. My wife and I waited to the end of the day. Before we were leaving, my wife went to the restroom, and the prosecutor came up to me singularly and started talking about taking a plea deal. I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not going to take a plea deal. And my wife started coming back. He saw her and I think panicked and started leaving. I said, besides, isn't it against the rules for you to be talking to me without my lawyer? And I was never more shocked in my life at what he said to me at that point. He said, who do you think makes the rules? And just walks away. That's when we knew we were in for trouble. It's like, this is crazy. I told that to my lawyer. He said, there's nothing you can do. It'll be your word against his word, et cetera. But right there in the Boston federal courthouse, the prosecutor who was leading this up at the time told me, who do you think makes the rules? As he approached me in the courthouse without my lawyer there, violating a number of norms, and asked me to take a plea deal. And then we knew things were going to get worse from there. And they did. They piled on 9 felony charges for me, more than anyone else, almost as many as Bernie Madoff, more than Sam Bankman-Fried. They charged me 180 years of prison time to try to get me to plead guilty to cover up the false charges. Think about that. 180 years of prison time for making a donation for kids who are highly qualified to get a tiebreaker boost. That's how this process kept going. And so we knew they were going to give up. I even went to the extreme of volunteering to take a polygraph test. I took 2 full days of polygraph tests with the former head of the FBI polygraph division, separately quality controlled by the head of the CIA polygraph division, who ran the federal government's polygraph school for 10 years in South Carolina. This is the real deal. I passed more than 20 questions over 2 days, all with flying colors. And the government had all that information too, and they ignored it. At my sentencing, they said, those are just self-serving polygraphs. You know, they're not admissible unless we agree to them, and we don't agree to them. And that's the kind of thing they can do. And it's just outrageous. So they really were never going to back down. Once they go down this path, it would be too humiliating for them to back down and to say, we made a mistake.
We're talking with our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. John Wilson is author of Varsity Blues, Scandal Within the Scandal. What about the media's play in this?
The media was, you know, I think misled by the government. So the government, for example, told the media again and again, and they didn't do it in writing, and they didn't do it publicly, they did it sub rosa. You read the quotes from the New York Times, it says John Wilson's son wasn't qualified to play or was an alleged athlete, always with a comma, according to the prosecutors. So the prosecutors were feeding this false narrative to the media. And so they had, you know, no reason to believe that what they were saying wasn't true. They didn't suspect that the prosecutors had an ulterior motive. So even though the government knew my son had a world record, they knew that he was one of the fastest players in the country in water polo, one of the fastest on the USC team, that his USC team, that his coach from high school recommended him. He played on a national championship team in the Stanford Club National Junior Olympics, and he was invited to the U.S. Olympic team twice. They had all that evidence. We know they had it because they blocked it all during my trial. That's another crazy thing that happened. They blocked it all piece by piece during my trial. So they had it all, and yet they fed the media these lies. So the media reported the false statements that the government gave to them, and that's unfortunate. But perhaps the most outrageous media travesty here was Netflix. And we have to fight Netflix. We're suing them. We won the first battle against them. They came out with a documentary before my trial even happened, which included 10 families that pled guilty and me. And they knew that I was not pleading guilty. And because they pre-announced their movie, we gave them a warning letter in advance, 550 pages long from my lawyers, that included all the exculpatory evidence that was publicly available about my case, including the polygraph test results. They had all that and they ignored it and just issued their movie without making any notice of that. And to this day, their movie is still out there smearing me through guilt by association with people who pled guilty when I've had all my charges, core charges, overturned. And it's available now to their 290 million subscribers and 500 million viewers in 190 countries. And it's devastating to my poor son, who's depicted as being a fake athlete.
If it can even be described, what sort of toll has this taken?
It's impossible to really describe as a father seeing your children suffer every day for 7 years, not at the hands of a bully from the schoolyard who might be jealous, but at the hands of federal prosecutors who should know better, who are supposed to defend innocent children, not falsely smear them. And by USC, who threw my son under the bus at the trial. They said that this was all a bribe and that my son didn't play on the team, even though he was registered with the NCAA. And by Netflix, who falsely depicted us. So to see your children suffer at the hands of these three Goliaths has been unbearable as a father. And to watch my poor wife, as she almost every night cried herself to sleep, and still cries herself to sleep, worrying about our children's future. It's just impossible to be helpless as this is all happening. And even though all of my core charges have been overturned, you know, where do we go to get our reputations back? And how do I protect my children for the future? You know, it's just an impossible situation to deal with.
We're talking with our author of the week, John Wilson, Varsity Blues, Scandal Within the Scandal. Final question. Yeah, I imagine a lot of people probably have said, why did you just, I bet if you just did what the prosecutor wanted and you just pled, it would have been a much easier path to have taken than the one that you did, though in hindsight, we always have that benefit. But how is it that you got through this?
It's been very difficult. We always had the choice to take a plea deal, literally from the first day in that courthouse and forward. And that was the easy path. We knew that. Our lawyers told us the government wins 99.6% of the time. And it would cost millions of dollars to fight. It would take years. But we decided to fight for three reasons, really. One, if we confess falsely to a crime I didn't commit, it would reinforce the government's narrative, the false narrative, that our kids weren't qualified. Remember, what happened here at its core was parents who had unqualified kids were bribing and cheating and faking profiles so they can get their unqualified kids in. My kids were qualified. If I pled guilty, it would feed that false narrative and it would just damn my children to live for the rest of their lives with this scarlet letter that they weren't qualified and that their own father didn't believe they were qualified. I couldn't damn my children that way. The second reason I fought was because I couldn't live with myself. My DNA wouldn't let me plead publicly guilty to a crime I didn't commit. And the third reason we fought is what the government did, Netflix did, and USC did here is wrong, and we're doing everything we can to hold them accountable and to do what we can to make sure it doesn't happen to anybody else. Because we can bring attention to this, it can hopefully stop some of the bad actors from doing the same kinds of things to other people.
Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, John Wilson, the book Varsity Blues, Scandal Within the Scandal, Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.